Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good evening and welcome once again, Madame Perry Salon, the podcast where fascinating people meet. I am your hostess, groove mistress, and spiritual advisor, Madame Perry, but you can call me Jen, Jennifer, Perry, JP, Ms. Perry, just as long as you're here. And I'm so glad that you are. Thanks to everyone who's been following and subscribing and reviews. Spotify tells me that you can now leave reviews while you're listening to the podcast on Spotify. I don't know. I haven't tried it yet, but if you have, let me know. And let me know if it works well. You know, recently we had, Andy Stillwell was on a couple of months ago. And, you know, her new book is None of This is Going According to Plan. Now, the first time Brandy was on here, I think she was still working with DC Comics. And she, you know, she wrote on a lot of comic books. And then, because of her character, she created, I think while working with Second City Improv there in Los Angeles, a character she created, which was a Sasquatch detective, got so popular that DC said, well, let's go ahead and do a comic book about that. So you may know Sasquatch Detective, but you may know Brandy from a lot of her work with shows like Family Guy, Mad TV, several films she's done. I've been posting one film that she did. She did voices on it with Natasha Lyonne and Jane Lynch. So check out Brandy's book. I'm going to have her. Actually, I've just signed her to my, she's my client now. So I'm going to be sending her your way. If you want her to talk to your group, school about writing, about comics, about acting, go to your bookstore, let me know. Yeah, it's a shameless plug, but I've got no shame because it's my podcast. Anyway, Dave Koz that was on here, I think that man just never quits touring. You know, he was on just as he was when he had a, the last CD come out, he was on the show here, and he said, oh, come on, when we have the cruise again, you got to go on the cruise, this and that. I don't think that man ever quits working. He's always on tour. Also, who else has been here lately that was, DC, the Brain Supreme, also known as, you know, that's the one thing about jazz and show business stuff, and everybody's got some different names or a stage name, and you get to where that's the only name you know them by. DC the Brain Supreme from Tag Team, whoop, there it is, and he's in the Geico commercial saying, scoop, there it is. He was on, he's working on the show Games People Play it's filmed right here in Atlanta. He was the most fun guest, but, you know, he's probably going to come back on in a few weeks. But remember, that show, that man is so generous with wanting to help give solid advice and suggestions and directions for people. And I don't mean like don't give up on your dreams, you know, stay strong. I mean, he gave specific steps that people should take when they called in. So that was what a sweetheart. And yeah, he'll be back soon. So tonight I am so psyched. This guest, what a kind man. I think I asked him to be on the podcast several months ago, maybe last year, and then I'll finally get to it. And he's graciously agreed to come here to this genie bottle, my salon in cyberspace. He's a science fiction writer, poet, zombie wrangler, former radio guy. He's a speaker. Yeah, you can have him come out and talk to you anytime. I understand he's a podcast host or co-host as well. I don't know. This man, I'm finding him everywhere as I began to research him. So let's just bring him here. Poet, author, zombie wrangler, and many more things. Mr. Matt Betts. Matt, welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
Oh, thank you so much, Madame Perry. I appreciate it. I love your bottle here. This is amazing. It's like stained glass everywhere. It's like, you know, it's colorful and it's just so amazing to be here. And thank you so much for that great introduction.
Well, you're quite welcome. And I hope you have a nice, I try to get all the nice fluffy pillows fluffed up for you. So hopefully you'll be very comfortable, settle in.
But,
and, you know, the more comfortable you are.
Right. Because the more I'll talk.
Exactamente, mi amigo.
Unless it's too comfortable, then I'll fall asleep. And then you've got that guest on your couch and you've got a half hour of snoring, which I'm sure your guests that have them. You said they could give you a review as the podcast is happening or as the show is happening. Well, is he sleeping? I'm giving you 0 stars. You have a sleeping guest.
No, I'll
not
tell them
good.
That you're doing. Yeah, there's only so long that I can disguise it as a sound effects from Turtle in Odd Man Out.
Right. There you go. Exactly. Yeah, it's like a walking big machine. It's what I sound like snoring. I've been told.
Yeah, he's just trying to do the sound effects. He's just trying to bring the book alive for us. So when he does the airship, well, welcome.
You've got so much.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say you were talking about people that you know their stage name, but half the time you don't know their real name. I mean, coming up in radio and hanging out with so many authors, half the time I don't know whether they're using a stage name or they're using a pen name or it's their real name. And sometimes I'll know someone for years and somebody will be like, oh, you didn't know his real name was John Smith? And I'm like, what? No. So it happens regularly. I mean, it happened not that long ago. I was at a conference. Like, oh, you didn't know that was a pen name? You know, I'm like, I had no idea. I had no clue.
That's true. I remember around 2000, the local jazz station at Clark Atlanta University, they were doing a photo of everyone playing jazz in Atlanta at the turn of the century, and it was on a Sunday afternoon. They figured everybody would be free. And so we all met up, and people were – and I know you can picture this, Matt. People were introducing themselves to other people. And then they would say, yeah, man, I know. We gigged last night at Dante's Down the Hatch. And it kept on till people realized they had not seen each other in daylight before. So that's
right. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I worked the night shift in radio from, you know, 11 to 6 in the morning for several different stations over the years. And, you know, there are people I don't think I ever did see in the daylight. The morning show would come in and, you know, they would start their thing and I would go home at, you know, I'd be home by 7 in the morning and back to sleep. And the rest of the crew, the rest of the staff, I never saw them. But those people I never saw in daylight. Because at the time I was in college when I started and, you know, I'd go straight home or I'd have to go straight to an exam or just straight to a class or whatever. So I didn't get to hang around and meet everybody or hang around and talk. It was, you know, I'd go out, it was dark. It was dark. I had to get out. I had to go. So yeah, there were a lot of people I literally never saw in the daytime.
So you're there physically, but you're in a different world. It sounds like you actually have an alternate universe going on, or you did, or anybody that
sometimes.
Was.
Yeah. It was really weird. I mean, you know, when I look back on it, you know, at the advanced age I'm at now, and look back at those college years, and try and remember when I actually slept. You know, I would go to work at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and I'd come home. I'd be home at 7, and either if I could get some sleep, great. If I had a class, I would just stay up and. I struggle to remember sleeping in college, and today I just there's no way I could handle that. You know, my body does not agree with that lifestyle anymore. You know, and it's the same with writing. I used to stay up and writing until, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning or later, and I can't do that anymore. You know, it's just my the words do not flow so well at 1 in the morning for me anymore. Oh, in fact, one of my favorite jobs in college, I worked at a comedy club. And, you know, I would go in at 7 o'clock and we'd all be there. We would close at 1, clean up until maybe 2. And then none of us wanted to go home. So we would go over to somebody's house and a bunch of us had instruments or whatever, you know, we'd play guitar, or, you know, and we'd sit around and drink and play guitar until we realized it was 6 in the morning. And had to get going and do either another job, or we had to go to bed, or we had to go to a class. And I mean, that, like I said, I loved the job itself. You know, being in a comedy club and seeing all these greats do their acts was great to begin with. And then we just sort of had that fun high going when we left, that we just didn't want to go home and go to bed. So let's all go do something else. And it became a thing where we just packed up and went to somebody's house.
Yeah, I guess you're still very exhilarated from the scene, from the comedy, from the energy.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That. Did you ever do stand up?
I never did, and people always told me I should. You know, because I like to write humor. I love doing comedy. I love that job. And you know, you have those friends who are like, oh, you should be a comedian, but they don't really look at it from the idea of being on stage. I thought about it, and then I was a waiter. They had an open mic night, and I was a waiter for the open mic night. They only put like one or two people on those nights because it wasn't really that busy. It was, you know. So I was waiting, and somebody walked up to me and said, "Hey, we went to school together." And I said, "What?" And so I talked to him, and we went to I think it was high school. We went to high school together. I said, "Oh, that's great." And he said, "I am going to go up and do this." And he went up and did a set, and it went terribly. I mean, just, you know, I applaud him for getting up and doing it, but I just kind of the look and the feeling that I got from him, I thought, oh man, I don't know if I can do that. You know, and maybe I could now, but at that, you know, ego or whatever just kept me from going up. I just did not want to crash and burn. You know, I just couldn't handle it. So I enjoyed just sitting back from afar and watching people do it. And you know, like I said, the people that came through there were usually, you know, big names and everything else. So I love doing that, and I just could not picture getting up on that stage and doing it myself. So.
But you do a lot of public speaking, though, don't you?
I do. And like I said, today it might be different. I enjoy public speaking. I'm used to criticism because I also teach kids. There's a place here, a place in Columbus where I live now, that called the Thurber House, where they do a lot of great writing programming for kids. And so I sometimes teach classes there, and sometimes I teach their writing summer camp. But I'm used to kind of bombing in front of, you know, an audience because I, you know, I'm a little bit older than most. We're talking like kindergarten through, you know, all the way through high school. So most of them do not have my frame of reference when I'm telling a joke or I'm making a, you know, making an obscure reference. They just don't even, they look at me funny and we move on. But so I'm used to bombing in front of an audience, but they're usually much younger. So I build up that thicker skin now. And, you know, I'll get up and I'll read my work in public. And so sometimes that goes well and sometimes that does not. So you're right. I mean, at this point, it's different. But back then, I was, you know, so sort of painfully shy about getting up and talking to people sort of that where I'm the total center of attention. I mean, I did news and I did DJing and stuff when I was in college, but getting up there and being that sort of open and free with everybody just was not my thing yet.
Yeah, you know, it is different. It's about as naked as you can be. Like Jerry Seinfeld says, you got nothing, no backup band, you got nobody up there if anything goes wrong. But, you know, now I remember, well, actually it was an incident where I had this accident, and it was on my birthday, and I thought of all the things that I'd, you know, if I had never done this or tried this, you know, I'd be regretful. So I thought, I always wanted to try to sing, but not in front of people. So what I did to get over my stage fright was take a course in stand-up comedy. And then of course, most of the people there didn't want to do stand-up. They just wanted to be able to give presentations at work and so forth. So I did that, and of course, you know, we have our graduation in a big comedy club, Punchline in Atlanta, and it is planned so well because everyone has to be there at the same time. You just can't just come when your person's going to be on. They give them, and it has to be at a certain time so that they've got at least 2 hours of drink time in before we start. And just, it's just like, you know, that they set it up. They set us up to succeed, in other words. And, and we give the teacher our list, our jokes, you know, our script that we were going to do, our material, so that if we forgot a line, he could step out and give it to us, which sounded horrifying, but it wasn't so bad when it happened. It turned out very funny. So, it's I thought if I can get a friendly audience.
Yeah, if you had a friendly audience, that helps tremendously. But if you know, walking out there and having no idea what the mood is, you know. But yeah, no, that's great. There's a place in Columbus that does the same that does sort of improv classes, and I've been thinking about doing that myself. But that's got to be really really helpful.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then you know, the thing is, once you get out, I'm sure you know this with friends of yours. If you go out to hit the open mics, you know, the same material you might do 2 weeks in a row, but in different parts of town. And so one place it might kill, the other place you might bomb. But it's the same.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's just that's part of the excitement, you know, too, and it's the rush. So, yeah, that got me over my fear so I could do other things. Now what am I doing? I'm here on this podcast where, you know, it's quarantine casual. Audio only, hair and makeup people. I saved you a lot of money with the hair and makeup folks and stuff.
There you go. Well, absolutely, especially the makeup, yeah.
But I think another thing you probably had as a bonus was that now I'm a publicist, as you know, and one of the things why I didn't want to work with authors anymore is that so many people see, and I know you've seen it, and I know as a writer, you may cringe at this like I do, but every time there's a TV show or a movie and all of a sudden a character starts scribbling in a notebook and writing, well, I'm thinking about writing a book, and then a week later they've got a publisher interested, and then their first book comes out and the bookstore is chock full. They got a line around the street, and people think that that's what it's going to be like, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was
you're
like, hey, you're
right.
Yeah, the first one might be like that. The second, like this happens to famous people too. You know, the first one, yeah, it's your hometown. You should have a lot of people there. The next one, maybe not. You know, maybe three people like Carolyn C. said in her book. Then the next time there were three people who just came in to get out of the rain. And then the next time it'll be full. You don't know. But so for any of my past or hopefully future clients, I'd like you to tell them a story. Now, your books are extremely popular, and you're popular.
Thanks.
But there was a story you told on a podcast I was listening to. I don't know if it was the one from All Access Con or a different one. But you were talking about first book, and you were doing a signing at a con.
Oh,
and
there were several. Go ahead. Sorry. Is it the one with the very, very popular author?
Yes.
So you're right. I mean, getting that first book going is crazy. For that particular book, my first book is called Odd Man Out. It came out in 2013. But it was one of my first books. I wrote another one about the same time, and I really did not know what I was doing. I hadn't taken classes on writing novels. I hadn't taken, I'd taken basic English classes from, university and stuff like that. So it took a long time for me to get this done. And it just so happened that a friend of mine, I started sending out to agents, and I was getting what was called good rejections, where actually the agent gets back to you and says, I liked it, but you lost me here, or, I really enjoy this, but it's not quite for us. So maybe if you did this or you did that, it might be better for us. So I got really good rejection. So it was very encouraging. And one of my friends came and said, where's the book at? And I said, it's kind of out there floating around. It turns out she was going to be the editor of a new line of books for this horror publisher. And she was going to be the editor for their new sci-fi line, which is great. And just want to take a look at it. And she and the publisher liked it. And so I was going to be one of their first ones out there. They were launching with like three books. And I think it was either the very first place we went, the first conference we went to with the book was in Baltimore. It was around D.C. somewhere. And the headliner is George R.R. Martin. And this is, big Game of Thrones stuff, when this is first hitting and really, knocking it out of the park. And so we're like, oh, this is going to draw a lot of people into the conference. This is terrific. And so in the middle of the thing, it was like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so on, I can't remember if it was a Friday. It was probably Saturday night. They had an all-author signing where every author that was there could have a table and sit there and get their books signed. They're going to have all the conference attendees, all the people, the readers or whoever was attending could come through and get their books signed, buy books from you or buy them from your publisher and have them signed. And at the head of the big other end of the ballroom was George R.R. Martin. and they could walk up onto this sort of stage and get their books signed by him. And I was like, this is great. So we're getting set up and we're kind of waiting around for it to open, walk out into the hallway to get a drink. And there's a line from one of the doors down the hallway, and it comes all the way down this side of the ballroom, and goes around the corner and keeps on going down the next hallway. And I'm looking at some of my, you know, my buddies were like, oh, this is terrific. Look at all these people. And so we walk back in, it's time. And almost every single one of those people went up and got something signed by George R. R. Martin. And then they left. They didn't walk through the rest of the book signing and talk to other authors and find out other, you know, other books. They got their stuff. They got their posters. They got their DVD sets or whatever it was, their books. And then they just took off and left. And so we were all kind of sitting there twiddling our thumbs from like any second now that crowd's going to come down that from him and come over our way. And it never happened. It was so disappointing. You know, like I said, after all the work you've been doing, you're like, all right, here it is. This is the payoff. This is my first big day. And it wasn't just me. It was everybody. You know, there may have been some people that were, you know, bigger names that got some books sold and signed, but for the most part, just about everybody else was just sort of passed by. It was a weird night, but it kind of toughened your skin a little more, you know. You're like, oh, okay. And like you said, one day, you know, with the comedians, you might go to one club and you kill, and the next one, you know, nobody wants to know your name. And so as an author, you got to realize that if you're going to a certain, you know, you might do well at one con, and the next one, there's going to be crickets, or there may be terrible attendance or whatever. And as much as you want to kill every single time, it just doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah. Somebody might say you're funny this time, but the next time they might say you're mean. Mm-hmm. Or
right.
Or come up with something like let's see, what did I get a few times? Like, hey, I really, really like the stuff you do. Here's a joke you could use. So these two priests go into a bar, and I'm going, yeah, well, one's got a parrot under his arm or something, that one. And the other, yeah, you heard this. No, but I think it'd be much better if you tell it. You know, I don't think I could do it justice.
Right.
So, yeah, like that. But, you know, it's like a master class, though, isn't it? Because nobody's going to take you aside and tell you. And when I had a client get upset about something, I had her at an event at Book Expo America. You know, that's a big deal.
Ooh. Oh, it's huge,
I said, you know, I had a signing for her there. I said, you know, the thing is this. Think of your favorite authors that you would like to meet. Now, if you're waiting with them in a green room area behind someplace, and they're telling stories about when they had no crowd show up or people didn't like them or bad reviews, and you don't have the same kind of story to share, they're going to take you out in the parking lot and just whoop, beat you. Well, in the South, we whoop. But they're going to whoop you out in the parking lot, and you shall deserve it, you know.
Right.
So,
well,
yeah, it's like a master plan.
Right. And I've been fortunate. You know, my books sort of, you know, fall between sci-fi and horror and, you know, a little of both in everything. But the horror community, from the people that I've met and the people I've hung out with, have been very generous with their time. And I've always, you know, I met a couple of really popular authors, and they always make some time to give me some advice, or they don't mind taking me aside and saying, look, this is a bad idea. Don't, you know, don't sign with these people, or don't do that, or whatever. Or, you know, you need to, you know, do X, Y, and Z to make this book sell, or whatever. I've been very fortunate to find that the horror community, especially with the Horror Writers of America, have been really, the people I've met through there have been terrific about it. And it isn't always the case, you know, with people you meet out there. And like you said, there are people that, you know, are focused on themselves. They want to sell their books. And if you're not selling yours, it's not their problem, you know? So, but luckily I've found some terrific people who really, you know, share their wisdom and really are, have gotten me to where I am at this point. And, that's why I kind of like teaching, going back and teaching, like I said, at the Thurber House and things like that, just because people have been generous for me, so I try and find a way to pay that back somehow, whether it's an upcoming author or whether it's, you know, just kids that want to learn something about writing.
Yeah, keep the good vibes going. By the way, this is a good time to say, if you're listening live tonight, and this is June 7th, 2022, 8:24 p.m., GMT minus 5, or is it 4 with time change? and you want to say something to Matt, you can do that. He's a friendly guy. The number is 646 716-9922. Blog Talk Radio assures me it is a toll-free call in the continental U.S., but 646-716-9922. And for people, and I think we've all been here, Matt, people who are listening, but they can't make a call because of their job or whatever is going on around them, or they got to be quiet for a sleeping baby or something, then you can just message in a question to me on Facebook, either through Madam Perry Salon or Jennifer Mott at Perry, and I'll be happy to share it with Matt. Well, now I forgot the other thing I was going to say. So, counselor, your witness.
Sidebar, Your Honor. Like I said, I'm thrilled to be here, and I would love to talk to anybody that has a question or wants to talk writing in general or a question directly for me. I'd love to make something up, or I mean answer it. So, you know.
All right. Now. Yeah, you know, interesting thing you said. Okay, oh, we've got a call. This one's all right, coming in. Give me just 1 second. We're going to bring you in to talk about
the power of suggestion.
I know. I told you people love you. you know, you're right. The horror, I never really kept up with a lot of horror writers until people began suggesting them or their publishers began asking to put them on the podcast. And they have been so charming and so friendly and helpful, not only to me and sharing my podcast, but also to each other and some of your best friends like Mercedes Yardley.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Is she the sweetest person and as well as a good writer? Lots of folks. Well, I've got somebody here. So let's say welcome to Madam Perry Salon. You're on here with Matt Betts. Introduce yourself.
Well, hello. It's Elise Draper.
Hello.
Oh. My gosh, Elise Draper.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Oh, I'm terrific. Thank you. It's a lovely day.
Finally a lovely day?
Yeah, we had a lot of rain before I came out here.
Oh, yeah. It's been hit or miss. You know, in Colorado, we wish it would hit. And hit. It's a little dry.
I miss Colorado. I already miss Colorado. That's went to the Horror Writers Conference up there in Colorado.
Yes, StokerCon was just here too.
Yeah, that's why I went to StokerCon. And then the last conference I went to before the pandemic hit, I went to Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, I think, or Colorado Gold, I think it's called.
We met with my daughter and I actually were at StokerCon doing the whole brunch thing. We met up with J.G. Fogarty and a couple others. We should have gotten in touch so we could have some lunch.
Yeah.
Brunch over at the hotel.
I made the biggest mistake of deciding to take an early flight out on Sunday. So I decided to cram as much as I could into Saturday. So I was like in every workshop I could get into and everything else. And then I will never do that again. Because I crammed so much in and then had to leave. So.
And you know, Colorado is one of the most beautiful states in the country.
I loved it.
But you don't get to see it when you're in the middle of downtown. And I would have actually loved taking all of you lowlanders up to altitude just to, you know.
Right. I was surprised. I've never done that. I've only been to Colorado twice and both times for conferences. But I laughed because I went to a convenience store to get something to drink, and I saw they sold oxygen. This like 7-Eleven had little containers of oxygen. I went, oh yeah. Like little small ones, and they had a little bit bigger ones, and I was just so shocked.
It is altitude sickness is a real problem here. So they make it available, especially after the pandemic. I think they found that.
Yeah.
It was easy for, especially, you know, how many long-termers are having lung issues, and they're a mile above sea level in our lowest point. So
it can
eat them just a little bit.
But I've been over it for a while. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the last time I talked to you was during our interview. That was in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And how are you doing? You're getting out. You're going to conferences now. Do you have any new books?
Finally. I don't have any new books. I've got one that's out there. I'm uh, trying to get an agent, so I've got a couple of agents that have it right now, and I'm waiting to hear from them. Hopefully, fingers crossed. And then I started writing a new trilogy that the first one hopefully will be ready by Christmas time, if not the first of the year. I wanted to write a fun sort of X-Files, but basically just around cryptid sort of thing. So it's a series. Yeah, it follows an FBI agent and a state trooper, and they end up getting pulled into this organization that investigates Bigfoot and all this fun stuff. So,
for anybody who's listening who hasn't read Matt's work, it is truly a love letter to Asher and the stares and the confusion and the general perspective is always fun.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
And like
you
reading
know,
the scripture.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Jennifer and I talked back and forth, and when she told me that you were on, oh my goodness, I just was so excited to hear that you are out and beating back the beast that is not writing, not publishing that. And I really hope that you get that agent and they can get some of the stuff on the screen, because it's really quite, it's original. And we are desperate for original viewing, I think.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I might start putting that in my cover letter.
I'll sign it for you.
People are desperate for that. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I think it's kind of, you know, when you talk about my work, it's like, stuff that I want to read that just isn't out there, stuff that, you know, is sort of a big mixture of the things I loved when I was a kid and just want to put it all together and see what happens. And usually it comes out kind of fun.
Yeah, and, you know, when you're writing as long as we have and you've run the game as long as we have, it's funny that most of us that stick to it also have background in comedy and radio and acting.
Right. Yeah.
Everything else. I mean, I think it comes from we've been beaten down so hard that we're like,
right.
You bad critic? Yeah. No, you're nothing. Right. I got things thrown at me. Right.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Oh, and Jennifer mentioned the drinking a couple before doing the comedy. Oh, hell, I drank during. I think I was drunk during our interview.
Your interview with Matt or your interview with me?
Oh, no, just now when you were talking to Matt about when you guys would go, before you go on stage, you'd have that couple hours in the bar to waste nothing, get your drink on. I'm like, hell, 2 hours. I was drinking during.
Well, actually, what that was, Elise, was that because it was my graduation from our comedy class, they wanted our guests who came to see us to have 2 hours to drink so they would laugh at anything we said and make us feel good.
See, you know, that's brilliant. That's
right.
Brilliant.
I know.
That's why things were thrown at me, because I was the only one that was drunk. That's why.
See, you can't do that
get
with
it
the audience
now.
With a podcast or with radio. You can't get the audience drunk through those methods. You know, you're on your own. You know?
I know. It's true. Although, you know, Greg Holland and Zach Jack and that crew, I got to tell you, if you didn't drink, you're in trouble. It's just good to hear our group coming out from under the behind closed doors, and I'm so glad to hear you out and about, Matt. This is good.
Thank you.
This makes me happy.
Yeah. I think we talked about it a little bit, but even during the pandemic, you know, it was one of those things where you said, oh, great, I've got all this free time now, you know, might as well make the most of it and I'm going to write. But it just didn't work for me. I would sit down and I was completely blank. I have notebooks full of ideas that I've got, you know, I've got stories already, you know, planned out, and I just sat down and none of it worked for me. So I'm thrilled to get out there and get that recharge from seeing my friends and seeing people at conferences and finally getting to teach classes and stuff like that again in person rather than through the Zoom or whatever we have. You know?
Right. Then it's funny because it seems like, you know, everybody thinks that a writer sits behind a desk all day long and we're used to being an introverted in the house and so on and so forth. But I think that was a standard message of all the writers, the professional successful writers that I know. We were all kind of like, we were stumped because we need to live. Yeah, we've got to live. It's, we don't live behind a desk as much as people would like to think we do. So this finally getting through was good. The finally getting out.
Right, right.
And then taking advantage of the world.
Right, right. So, well, for me, I think what's really getting me going is that my kids are out of school now. And so I've always kind of had that worry about them in the back of my head. Even with lower, you know, pandemic rates or lower, you know, COVID rates and everything else, just having them out there was something that was always in the back of my head that sort of made me worry. So,
yeah, I think that that's it. What about you, Jim? I mean, you stayed on top of these podcasts and you had some amazing guests on during the pandemic. Thank you so much for giving us that entertainment.
Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome. You know what? I got to tell you, I went in with the attitude of they're not doing anything else, you know. Okay, sure, they're busy because they're on a Netflix series, but what are they doing right now? In fact, Art and Marie, I got to tell you, that's how what a knucklehead I am. You know, Art Marine that plays Regina Sinclair on Insatiable on Netflix, have you seen that?
Mm. No, I haven't, but my daughter's watched it and loved it.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's the character. Yeah. Her character is the one that she's a real estate agent, and she stole an Asian baby at a mall when the baby was, well, but now she's grown up. And, of course, when the girl finds out about it, she tells her, but, you know, out of all the Asian babies that were there, you're the one that I chose. So that's the kind of show it is. And, of course, her nemesis is played by Alyssa Milano because she's seeing Alyssa's husband, you know. And it's a funny show. It really is.
Right.
But anyway.
Yeah.
So I asked her, and she said, yeah. And then before the show started, I said, I am so excited. I can't believe you're on my show. She said, well, you did ask me, remember? So, yeah.
I was just saying, there's so many people that I ended up, you know, getting on, you know, the podcast that I'm like, should I ask them? I can't ask them. They'll never say yes, you know. But you never know until you actually ask them. And like you said, you know, it's they weren't doing too much anyway, so why not, you know?
See, you understand.
Right.
Really does.
Yeah.
You do. You think that, and the thing, and you know a lot more people than I do, but. But I think that's when I saw a thing with Chris Rock on Kimmel, and of course it was zoomed in. He wasn't there in person because it was. He goes, man, I hate it out here. I hate not being famous. I hate not being out and being recognized. This is awful. This is a horrible way to live. So thank you very much for that, Elise. Because that was I wanted to take advantage and still keep things going for everybody, and for me. Mm-hmm. Keep it entertaining. So when are you going to have a new book for us?
Oh, actually, you know what I've been working on lately is I'm actually the marketing manager for a publishing house.
Ooh.
And narrative nonfiction. So I've been working with them, organizing everything and getting them out of the academic field and into the general population, New York Times bestseller. So lately it's been more talking to C-SPAN Book TV than it has been writing anything really fun. Press releases and the like, you know, because you're a publicist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's nonfiction?
It is. It's nonfiction. But okay. I don't think I'm premature in saying this. By next year, we'll probably branch off to a fiction imprint. So that'll be fun. But
so,
go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I hate, no, just a thought. If you have, say, like if you had a friend who was kind of funny and she had a book of essays about her life that she called it Memoirs of a Misanthrope, but they were very funny, and she had a podcast to promote it with. Just an idea. I'm just making this up as I go along. Okay.
I think I might talk to that friend then and see if they'd be interested in submitting. Yeah. We can make that work.
Thank you. Have you had now before you get uncomfortable and leave? It's like, oh God, let me get away from her before she asks again. Have you read any of the Carson of Venus series of Matt Betts?
No, no, I don't think so.
Those were the.
Is this the new?
That's my latest. Yeah, that. Well, it came out 21. So yeah, not that long ago.
Well, tell us all about
I'm
it.
Behind.
While we gals are sitting here, get your nice pillow that you used last time and get comfortable and let Matt tell us about it. It's like a bedtime story.
Yes. I would love that.
Well, it's one of those cases where you were kind of, I was kind of in the right place at the right time. I had applied to write some books, sort of role-playing game type adventure novels with a gaming company. But they said they weren't quite what I was looking for. But the gentleman who's in charge of it eventually moved over to Edgar Rice Burroughs' estate. So he became their director of publications. And it's Christopher Paul Carey is his name. And so he said, you know, that you weren't quite right for that job way back when, but we want to talk to you about continuing a series that Edgar Rice Burroughs started in the 1920s, and maybe last wrote in, he was writing another book in the 1940s in this series when World War II broke out. Literally, he was in Hawaii writing when the war broke out. And so he put this series aside, this Carson of Venus series, put it in his drawer and went off to, you know, do whatever he could do for the war effort and just never came back to it. So... I think he came back to some of his other books after that, like Tarzan and the like. But so, you know, fast forward, and here they want to sort of not reboot the series. They want to literally continue that series, you know, where he left off, more or less. You know, you take his world and his characters and make it a little sort of adventurous for you know, a whole new, you know, millennium or whatever, a whole new century, and start it up. So we talked for a while about characters, and we ended up with me doing this Carson of Venus, who is, like I said, probably one of his lesser known characters, but he had done I don't have my PR notes on that anymore, but I think he did four books and a novella with his character. And so they wanted to start that up. And then continue this, make a whole new series, but with all these famous characters. So I wrote this Carson of Venus to start this sort of mini series. The next guy was wrote Tarzan, and then John Carter of Mars. And then the end of the series is coming out soon. It's a whole new character that's being written into this this world. So, you know, it was kind of fun because I was in the right place at the right time. I got to be the first person to write a story that was commissioned as canon for Edgar Rice Burroughs' work. You know, there are other books that have been written that, you know, famous people wrote, and then they said, okay, we'll put that and make it part of Burroughs' canon. But I was the first person who said, hey, we want you to write a book and it'll be canon from day one, which was exciting.
What an honor.
Yeah. Right. So I got to set up this whole series, this whole arc of books. And then they said, hey, we're also going to write a 3-issue comic book. And so I helped write that a little bit. You know, I gave them the plot and we talked it over. And so as a big comic book fan from when I was a kid, it was a blast to get to write and bring that to life. And then, you know, so it's a blast. And so it was really well received. I've been to some pulp conferences since. And I, you know, a lot of people who really know the characters and really know Burroughs, you know, came up to me and said how much they enjoyed it. So it was terrific.
Oh, that's an honor. Now the manuscripts that he had put away because Pearl Harbor and all that, I get it. But did you get to see these manuscripts? Were they ever published?
I all they've ever told me is that he started writing another book when the war broke out. So I don't know if he had how far he got, if he was just plotting or if he, you know. So I didn't get to see any of the originals, unfortunately.
But that's okay. I mean, as with your ghostwriting and other skill set, you can take a voice and run with it. I know you can. Goodness, what an honor.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Wow. Hey, and even better, because at first I kept reading it wrong and thought it said Carson of Vegas, and I looked at the cover, you know, with that picture, and thought, well, it might be a different, yeah, but Carson of Venus, yeah. Hey, guys, hold
Carson
on a second.
Vegas,
if you're listening,
I'm writing that down.
we come in dressed like that into a Vegas, they're going to think, what do they break curtain or something? Well, that's not going to start yet. So, just one second, folks. If you're listening live, I'm talking with my guest is Matt Betts, poet, author, zombie wrangler, and we have a very special mutual friend here, writer Elise Draper. Very cool. And I've got, if you want to call, 646-716-9922 or send a message, we're happy to. Guys, would you mind just sitting back and kind of cushioning into your cushions and while I play something, this will be about 2 minutes. Ready?
All right.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Do you like podcasts that feature high-profile interviews?
I do.
Two girls, one gold shot.
Oh, my. I think you've got the wrong end of the stick.
What sort of stick are you referring to? Flobo voice. How are you, Flobo?
I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this, but, man, I love your voice. I am transported to LA Confidential.
Do you like podcasts that offer audio skits?
I do.
Ma'am, you also need to pay for your vegetables.
Not according to Proposition 47.
Our food debt is under $950, so we're good to go!
You like podcasts that have original music?
I do.
She heard about what's going on.
Then I invite you both to visit www.hesaidsheheard.com. And again, www.hesaidsheheard.com.
I mean, the world has gone crazy, right? I mean, this whole pandemic, I don't even know if I'm coming or going anymore. You know what I mean? But the one thing during the pandemic that I found out, right, that was a good thing, was the Madame Perry Salon. I mean, this podcast, right? When you hear her laughing, all you want to do is laugh. Right? When her dog's barking in the background and she's talking to the duck, she's going to an interview, and I'm like, this podcast is the best podcast I've ever heard before. You know what I mean?
Now, back here with Matt Betts and our friend Elise Draper. Matt, I know Sebastian Maniscalco there didn't impress you because you met Larry Miller in person, who gave you career advice.
Yeah. Larry Miller, like I said, I love working at the Comedy Club, and there are just so many great people that were coming through there. And Larry Miller, you know him if you see him, whether even if you don't know the name off the top of your head, but he was in so many terrific movies. It was really big at the time too, but his stand-up is just terrific. And I was working for the paper at the college at the time, and I was working at the Comedy Club, and he let me interview him and was just generous with his time, and was really generous with making sure I was comfortable with the interview rather than him being comfortable. But he eventually talked about his career. You know, he's an actor and a stand-up, but he started out playing music. He was he's sort of classically trained with I think the piano and a couple other instruments. And so I kind of talked to him about what the difference is creatively for each of these sort of fields, comedy and acting and music, and why wouldn't you just focus on one of them? And he said that
each one of those things feeds a different part of him creatively. And whether, you know, you're stuck with a, you know, on a character, or you're stuck on a line for an act or something, that, you know, the music feeds into that. Each of them is a different type of creativity and sort of frees you up as you're working on one of them, you know. So you never have to do just one thing. There's no reason to do just one thing if you're creative, and if you're, you know, if you love doing something, keep doing it, and it'll help everything you do, you know. I've tried to, you know, live by that, you know, doing poetry, doing, you know, teaching, and I love music, mostly listening to it. I used to play all the time, but just don't find the time because I'm so busy at this point. But, yeah, you know, I've always loved doing all this creative stuff. And it's kind of like why I enjoyed doing the podcast so much, was I got to interview other creative people and find out how, you know, what one thing fed into another thing and fed into another thing for them. And it was just great advice. And I still think about it all, you know, it's not written above my office, but it probably should be.
Since you've mentioned poetry, that's what I was going to bring up too, if I could. Your poet, people know you, you've been in Arkham Tales, Ethereal Tales, The Triangulation, Taking Flight Anthology, mm-hmm. Bizarro Fiction, The Journal of Experimental Fiction, everything. Yeah. But your poetry has been published, and let's see, your poem, Godzilla's Better Half, nominated for a Riesling Award, the Science Fiction Poetry Association's highest honor. And your poetry's appeared in Starline, Escape Clause, Book of Tentacles, Illuming, 2010 Riesling Anthology, Kaleidoscope, and so many. And one of your pieces was mentioned in a New York Times article on zombie poetry.
That's a weird one, yeah.
Yeah.
What's that? You've been in the New York Times? Yes, I have. For what? Well, you know, zombie poetry. That was one that just was so weird. It just unfolded throughout a day. Go ahead.
There's points when it you actually are courting Dolly. You send love letters to ushers and court Dolly. So it's really, you're an artistic guy. We're giving a literature edge to this. Poetry
Thank
about
you.
Zombie is, you know, this is how we're going
to. Yeah, I mean, so I, you know, I started out, I was writing a novel, and I just was, you know, didn't have any training, didn't know what I was doing, and it was taking a long time. But I had joined a writer's group in my hometown, or in my current hometown. You know, I was exploring all kinds of things, and I wrote a couple of things, and one of the people in the group said, well, this is terrific prose poetry. And I said, well, that's exactly what I meant to do. Well, I have no idea what prose poetry is. So we sat down and talked about it, and I started taking some, you know, started going to conferences, and found out that one of the conferences here in town, I found out that there is such thing as horror poetry and sci-fi poetry, speculative poetry is called.
Oh, sure.
And
absolutely.
So I wasn't really good at writing, like, normal poetry that, you know, flowers and love and all that stuff, but I could write about flowers and love with a vampire in it, or with, you know, a zombie in it or something. And it still,
absolutely,
you know, would make it into some journals. It would make it into the best ofs here and there and things like that. So I started doing that. I started writing about subjects that I enjoyed and infusing them with, you know, actual emotion, but through the eyes of whatever, like the Godzilla poem. So the Godzilla poem started with a bunch of different parts, basically. The poem is about, it's a humorous piece about Godzilla destroying Tokyo and his girlfriend or his wife asking, you know, why do you keep doing this, basically. And it came together through me watching my son then, who was, you know, just learning to crawl, and he would crawl around the living room and knock over all these block towers. And I wondered, and he would get really mad if you picked him up without him knocking down that tower. He would cry. So it was kind of me asking him this question, why is it that important to him? But then thinking about something else that I loved, like Godzilla, my favorite movies, why does Godzilla destroy Tokyo all the time? And so they sort of weave together, you know, different things. And, you know, there's a song lyric in there that I loved, and I found a way that it sort of made sense in here. I had no idea that any of this was a thing, that horror poetry is a thing, until I met some people at a conference. And then I just loved doing it.
and I'm still trying to write that book, right? But I'm writing this poetry, and the poetry is making me some money. I'm sending it off to magazines, and I'm getting a few bucks here and there, while the thing I really want to do is sort of, you know, sticking his tongue out at me. And so whenever I got stuck, I would just stop and write some poetry until I got unstuck and go back to the writing. And it just became something I loved doing on the, sort of at the side there. And you talked about the New York Times thing. It was funny because, you know, early on with Google and a couple other things, you could you still could do it, but you could, like, set a whatever it is, a watch for your name, and it would, whenever your name came up in the media or whenever it came up on the web, they would send you an email and say, you know, your name was used here or there. And I got one day, but I couldn't open it for some reason. It was, like, behind a paywall or something. And it said Matt Betts, and then it said something about the New York Times. And I said, well, I know of at least four other Matt Betts that pop up. It's got to be one of them. Why would I pop up in the New York Times? So, but I kept, I was supposed to be at my day job. I was working. I was trying to figure out what was going on, but I was supposed to be doing my day job. And then finally we cracked it. And here was this, it was about the time that The Walking Dead was starting to get big. It was like the first season had done so well. And so they were writing, you know, an article about sort of a different angle on the zombie thing. And it was a whole article about zombie poetry. And so they quoted one of my poems just sort of out of the blue in the New York Times, and, you know, my name's there. So it was really a big, exciting, weird thing all of a sudden to be able to say, I'm in the New York Times for zombie poetry.
I've got to ask you. I should have asked you this earlier, and I apologize for that. Could you read Godzilla's Better Half to us? Do you have it handy? Do you have it somewhere?
I could. Give me just 1 second, and I'll grab the copy.
Thank you.
No, I love it. There's reorganizing of pillows. I hear it. I hear it. You know, I'll braid his hair. You get the teeth. And we can just let him read.
I guess I've got to find my glasses, I suppose. Now I got to see what I'm doing. Okay. originally, I wrote this, and it was called The Night Godzilla Dumped His Chick, and I sent it to this place, and the editor says, I really like this, and I have a couple words here that I want to change, but what do you think of changing the name to Godzilla's Better Half? And this guy was a very, very famous poet, so I said, sure, we'll change the name. And that's where it ended up. But the original was called The Godzilla Dumped His Chick, and I don't know which name is better. I think it's a fun poem for people to read, but it's really fun to hear it, I think. I really enjoy doing it when we do, like, poetry readings and, you know, open mics and stuff like that, just because it's fun to actually read. And the other thing is, there's some things I wrote in here that the other reason why I like reading it out loud, there were a couple of things I put in here that I didn't realize were funny until I was reading it, and people just started cracking up at something, and I thought, oh, that is funny, isn't that? But I didn't realize it. Okay. All right, let me give it a shot here. Godzilla's Better Half. What is it about Tokyo that keeps you going back there time after time to wreck it, to tear it down like you do? I want to understand, my darling Gojira. Is it a hatred, a compulsion, maybe? Do you wake from terrible dreams with the city's name on your lips? It was impressive when you leveled the town the first time, but when you obliterate the same city over and over, it just looks like you're afraid to try something new. Like you have no ambition. I believe in you, baby. It's everyone else that needs to see what you can do. Is there another woman that draws you, breasts flaming, scales a Twitter? Is that it? Is the destruction all a cover-up, something to divert attention away from your indiscretion? Look at me, I'm crushing your power station, not cheating on my significant other. Does she make you so crazy that you feel like knocking down a few buildings just to show off to her? Is she the type that's impressed by a fleeing populace and a stymied army? I woke in the middle of the night and you were gone. The bed seems so big without you there. You told me you went jogging, but I could smell Tokyo on your clothes, on your breath. I knew you were lying to me. What is it about Tokyo? If it's not a big deal, take me with you next time and show me why you love it and hate it, why you embrace it and push it away. Take me with you and we'll smash tanks and topple skyscrapers together. So that's Godzilla's Better Half, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Thank you. There are a lot of people that tell me that. There's a teacher who's told me he's read it to his classes, and I just a professor that says he's used it as an example in some of his classes. I'm always blown away by that. But the one thing in here that makes me laugh every time because I didn't realize it was funny was I woke in the middle of the night when you were gone. The bed seemed so big without you there, and I mean that it's a funny line that Godzilla's got to have a pretty huge bed. But it never occurred to me that that's what I was saying. So the first time I was reading it, people were laughing. And I thought, what is so funny? And then I started laughing.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's just fantastic.
I enjoy reading that as much as it seems people enjoy listening to it. So that's always good when you can have that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
This has been so much fun. And I know I've kept you longer than I thought. Than I told you I would. But thank you so much
for
being so generous with your time and for bringing for having such cool friends as Elise Draper to not only share and promote this show on her wall like she did, but to also come here and help me class up the joint.
There you go.
Thank you, Elise. I'll be sharing on a lot of people tell me they listen while they're jogging or when they're driving. So if you want to find Matt's work, I will be sharing links to his work and to his podcast as soon as he gives me that link, because I have found all kind of podcasts with that name. I got to be honest. And
yes,
there's a whacked out bunch there. So I will be sharing on all of my social media, not just Madame Perry Salon, but on Jennifer Maudette Perry. I'll be sharing links to go find Matt's work, his website, and all kind of cool stuff. And the same thing for Elise Draper. Elise, just go ahead and send it to me so that you don't have to miss a thing. And I am so grateful. Please don't make this your only visit to Madame Perry Salon now that you've got the pill just right.
Absolutely.
It's comfy.
Thank you so
it's
much,
comfy.
Madam. It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah. I always love coming here. I feel so refreshed.
And Elise, you'll have to come back. We should have I haven't done this in years. We should have a pajama party show where we're all with a bunch of fun people on the topic.
Absolutely. That would be a kick in the pants.
All right. I can dig it. Okay, I'm going to close out. Everybody be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. I think you're all wonderful. I'm going to close out with my song, Everybody's Got to Swing. If you want a copy of the CD, let me know. I'll send it to you. If you don't like this song, well, just keep it to yourself, okay? So, bye, everybody. You see my bad bet. Mother Goose was cut loose, and needs skinny. She wants straight skinny. Yeah, Peter Piper, you know he's a viper. And Simple Simon was bumping and grinding and scatting and rhyming too. See, that's got so stuttering skin. Oh, brother, that's grim. Oh, jump on in, cause everybody's got to swing. We'll